Okay. Welcome back to the podcast. On today's episode, we have Sebi, and we are at Panorama Heights Elementary School in Coquitlam.
Our stomping grounds.
We were here as children, and now we are here in our mid-20s. How does it feel, Sebi?
It feels weird. It feels weird thinking that, like, that 20-year-old comment was like, oh, we used to go here. It's like, what, 20 years ago? And we're like, we're not that. And then we realized that we're actually 2 years away from starting. Yeah.
We were here the other day, and some teens, I guess they were teens, came up to us, and they were like, what are you doing? How old are you?
Well, we just went here. We're doing this podcast. And they're like, what, like 20 years ago? And we're like, nah. And then we did the math, and yeah. We were 2005 is when we attended the school, and now it's 2024.
I'm also going to ask if you could bring your mic a little closer.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll do it right here.
Thank you. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Do you have any memories that surface on these grounds?
I knew that I was coming here to record this, and I told my dad, "Oh, I'm going with like Josh, like the kid with elementary school and all that stuff." And we were talking about, because you brought up pickup, and how like
end of the day parents pick up their children.
You were talking about how like all the languages being spoken. Mm-hmm. There was like Farsi, Spanish, Mandarin, like all these just like, you know,
a cacophony
of languages just being thrown at you. And you said that like felt so warm and everything.
Yeah.
And I was telling my dad, I was like, yeah, I think like 90% of students here in elementary were immigrants.
Mm.
But no, I just remember being like super multicultural. Elementary school was like the place.
Were you aware of that as a child?
No, not at all.
I don't think I was either.
Like we had, so in ESL, we had Multicultural Day, which in the name, I'm like, oh, it's the day that we all bring food from our country. Like I understood it. I just had no reference in mind of like that this isn't normal.
Mm.
In my mind, I'm like, everywhere must have a multicultural day.
Yeah.
So,
but to like be celebrated and to be asked to bring your cultural identity to school and have like show off.
My mom would always tell us like, you gotta eat the food from the other. I loved eating like the Korean and Chinese food. I like would go off, get second and third. My mom was like, you gonna give me.
Oh, your parents came?
Yeah. Cause I can't cook. My mom would bring the dish.
What did you bring?
I always brought like dessert. So like flan or media lunas. And then also like my mom would make empanadas. Mm. So not a dessert, just like more of like an entree, like you know what empanadas are.
Was that only for yes.
Yeah, okay.
Was that only for ELL kids?
Yeah.
Because I don't remember.
No, it was, we had it at the gym. We would all set up like chairs and stuff, and then we'd have like a buffet and
wait, I do remember that actually. Like maybe you held it and we just all attended it.
I don't remember. I remember not that many people attended.
Okay.
It was
maybe I'm just creating that memory.
Maybe. But those are all the things I remember.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
What about growing up, like middle school, high school?
Like contrast to elementary, where it was different.
Where you're now confronting reality, or you're becoming more aware of things.
More sentient.
Yeah. Self-actualized.
Yeah, like, oh my God. No. When it comes to like cultural identity?
I guess so. We can start there, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, being from Argentina, where they're like the main language is Spanish, of course. Whenever I heard Spanish here, I got like super excited.
Mm.
Which I don't know if it's like that common to be excited. Like I don't know, it's just like wasn't, especially like if I saw an Argentinian, a fellow Argentinian, I'd instantly be like so happy to see.
Yeah.
I remember that like our oldest friends are because we like arrived to Canada, went to a lake around here, and there was just another family that had also just arrived to Canada from Argentina.
Oh, you didn't know each other?
No, and they were wearing the Argentinian jersey.
Yeah.
So we like started that, and they're still friends to this day just because they were Argentinian. Awesome. We're like, look at all what we have in common. But I feel like that kind of like me looking for Spanish speakers started more towards high school.
I feel like you were like actively looking.
Not actively like looking. I'm like, do you speak it? And then I go, no, and I walk away. No, but like if I heard it, I'd feel motivated more to be like, oh, we probably have like so much like in common culturally. Yeah.
Why was that important?
I don't know. I don't know. I think it's just like my brother. It's literally just me copying my brother. My brother had like a huge Latin community of friends. And I was like, I want that. even though like I moved here when I was 3, so culturally I would say I'm like 70% Canadian, 30% Argentinian. But I don't know, I feel like when I was older I was just trying to connect to that, because everyone would talk about like, what, like, oh, like, are you, what are you?
Lovely question.
It's like, Argentinian. It's like, oh, do they speak Mexican? I'd be like, oh no, don't say that to me. Fun fact, I had a band. I made a band in high school with some friends that like were all Latin American, and our band name was called We Speak Mexican.
You gotta play into it.
Yeah.
After a while, it's like you can't let it bring you down.
Pretty much. Yeah. Do you remember walking home from school?
I do. I walked home with you sometimes.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
Okay.
I don't remember it in not elementary. Here. I remember it in high school.
In high school.
But I remember walking back from middle school. I remember walking back from elementary school, though, when my grandmother used to visit from Argentina. Mm. And one of our classmates, who was Korean, her grandmother would come to visit. Mm. And, like, I would walk with her, like, a couple steps ahead of our grandparents. And, like, my grandmother and her grandmother would just speak. And they would just communicate. They would, like, point at us and, like, laugh and then, like, share anecdotes. And then at the end, I would, like, ask, like, I'm like, what do you talk about? I don't know. Because she would speak Korean and then my grandmother would speak Spanish. But, it, I don't know, it's just, like, such a funny. This was such a great image to just see, like, two grandmothers that probably saw, like. Because my grandmother was born during the war in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, like, just, it's like, a weird, like, reality to just so, I don't know, like, if I, you know, thinking about that my grandparent, like, I don't know.
Wow, that was a lot.
I just think I had a stroke.
No, that's beautiful.
Like, I don't think she would have believed it if, when she was 25, if someone was like, yeah, your grandchild's just going to be, like, walking up in Canada talking to a Korean girl, and you're just going to be
In Coquitlam,
gossiping with her grandmother who speaks Korean. Who speaks Korean. You know, it's, like, such a weird, like, started it from is. The bottom, now we're here. Do you remember the arts being a huge thing in elementary school?
No. What do you mean by that? Like, what was like a huge thing?
Like, the school system. Do you ever remember, like, not prioritizing arts, because I don't think they ever prioritized it, but at least, like, allocating some budget to the arts program?
Hmm. I guess so. Again, I guess I just wasn't cognizant of that we had, like, art class.
What do you remember most? Like, what assignments do you remember most from elementary?
I just remember a lot of construction paper, a lot of glue, a lot of sticky fingers.
Okay, so, like, something artistic. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's, like, I remember all the assignments that were, like, art-focused.
Really?
Yeah. I talked
to... It spoke to you that much at that young of an age?
I think it's just, like, in general. I don't remember... Like, in middle school, elementary, and high school, I don't remember a single paper. I don't remember a single, like, essay paper that I had to write. I remember all the performance or all the kind of creative ways that I displayed that I understood the subject matter. Mm. And then I remember the Christmas concerts.
I remember the Christmas concerts.
That was so much fun. They weren't... Were they Christmas concerts, or were they just...
They were just, like, during winter.
Yeah, winter concerts.
And it was about
concerts.
Saving energy and saving water.
Oh, my gosh.
Not even Christmas-related.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, I kind of like it. I remember those songs to this day.
They were certified slappers.
If you could play it, I would know the actions and the choreography.
But the choreography was... Like, it's an overstatement to call it an... It's like... Like, the title would be, like, Let the Sun Rise, and then we just, like, do this, and then maybe do that. Like, it'd be very simple. There would always be that one person that got the rap or got the solo.
I love that there was a rap. You were so hip.
Do you think there was some racial profiling, though? Because I got that in high school, where, because I was the only Latino, sometimes in, like, theater plays, I just got the token Latin character, because they're, like, even though I wasn't right for the part in any way.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I was always a very, like, physical kid, like, a physically expressive kid, because when I moved here, I don't think, like, I spoke, like, I wasn't comfortable speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would speak, but, like, no one would really understand me. So I spoke, like, just, like, with my actions, you know, like, I was very expressive. So in theater, I always found out that, like, the Latin characters were the comic relief, and thus I was just happy to be a clown on stage, just be performative for a bit. So, like, I never really minded. I was never like, this is bad.
This is racial profiling.
I do remember one thing that kind of, I remember, like, it was an improv club, and I did an accent. Like, I did, like,
a Spanish accent?
I was like, okay. No mames. Como, like, what are you going to do? Like that. And they got, like, and then at the end of the improv, everyone was like, the teacher, like, put up his hand, and he was like, who felt, like, offended by this? And then, like, everyone put up their hands. And I looked around, I'm like, not a single person here is, like, from Latin America or Hispanic. But they, like, felt offended.
It's also such a weird way to go about it.
Yeah, I was, like, in the class. I felt so embarrassed. I left the club. I left the improv club. Because I was like, what? How are you offended? My family members sound like this. Like, this is, like, and I don't know. I remember that when, like, people didn't know. It was like, you can't. And then as soon as they knew, they're like, okay, we'll use this. You can be
like, you have
character.
To play the card.
Yeah, you can only, yeah. I don't know. I felt that was a little weird. Like, there was never a conversation. It was always, like alienating someone for not understanding. So I remember that. I didn't like that part about it. Like, I didn't like that it was convenient. Whenever it was convenient, they used it. Whenever it wasn't.
And then
convenient.
When you want to use it.
Yeah, they were like, whoa, we didn't give you the role yet. Let's settle down there for a bit.
Has that shifted for you as you've grown up, like, especially now as a teen, and now maybe you've gone through, like, a coming of age where you understand yourself more?
The only thing that's made me want to get closer to like, my cultural roots from Argentina is the language. I don't want to lose it. Mm-hmm. I want to teach, like, my kids whenever I have kids, like, Spanish. I don't want to lose that. I think that's very important.
Do you have the opportunity to use it?
Like, can I speak it?
Or I guess, like, I feel like a lot of people lose their mother tongue when they don't frequently use it.
I use it, but very, not that frequently, you know? Maybe with my parents. Mm-hmm. But that's the issue. It's like, with your parents, I would say that the vocabulary that you use when you speak to your parents, it's pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, hi. Like, the conversations never stray away from, like, you never have very,
basic.
Like,
yeah.
Just maybe I have, like, deep philosophical conversations with my parents once every 3 months. And that's when I can, like, kind of, like, learn. Like, I say a word and they're like, oh, that's not actually how you pronounce it. You pronounce it like this. I'm like, okay, amazing. But before that, it's like, hey, how's it going? Oh, what's for dinner? Oh, this tastes good. I'm like, oh, thank you, bye, okay, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went to Barcelona recently, and that was cool because I got to, like, practice.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I messed up, I'd be like, please correct me because I do want to improve.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that, I don't know if you would call it a language barrier, but how that affected your relationship with your parents? I'll just give, like, a little preface. Or, like, I've just spoken to a lot of people where they speak about how knowing their mother tongue is their only tether to their parents. And, like you said, they only know, like, basic terminology. And so, you know, if they want to have a conversation with their feelings or like, what they want to do with their life, those, like, more difficult, heavy conversations, like, both parties, the parent doesn't have the right words in English and the child doesn't have the right language in the native tongue. Have you ever felt that? Where it's like literally, like, mom, you don't understand.
Yeah, there's times where they, like, we get into a heated conversation.
Mm.
And I'm trying to express myself in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and I just get stuck. And they say, okay, express it in English.
Mm-hmm.
And that just, I'm like, I don't want to switch because I don't want to do, like, it feels weird speaking to my parents in English.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. And then they sometimes speak in English. I'm like, you don't know. Stop. This sounds weird. Right? Because I don't know. It's just like, it's so, I remember, like, funny enough, I always felt very envious of my colleagues, like my Canadian colleagues that spoke English and their parents spoke English perfectly and everything, and they would just be able to communicate themselves so, like, kind of like just like free-flowing, converse about every topic, just like super snappy. And then their parents would also answer back in, like, perfect English, of course, because it's the only language they know, they were raised here. So it's that, for me, that was so foreign. I was like, your parents sound so cool. Because in my head,
I felt that a lot too growing up. Not the envious thing, but there was this idea that your parent was so cool if they could speak fluent English.
Yeah. It's like,
what?
Which is weird because, like, no, that's the only language they know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I saw it as, like, hip Mm-hmm. I thought it was like, oh, so modern.
Yeah.
Just strange.
It is strange. I haven't thought about that.
Yeah.
But I do remember that. Huh.
Like being able to freely converse with my friend's parents, I was like, oh my God, this is so easy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no. That's. But yeah, I don't know. I never felt like. I remember some of my colleagues were like, I'm too Canadian to be Latin American. I'm too Latin American to be like fully Canadian, or mm-hmm. like I'm too white to be Latino. I'm too Latino to be white. I never felt that. But yeah, I don't know. I also feel like there's a weird like hierarchy when it comes to
like being authentic.
Being authentic, yeah. Being like not whitewashed. But
what did you feel as a child? Because I was definitely in the. Like found pride in being whitewashed or being called a banana. And now I look back on that and I was like, why did I want so badly to be not who I am?
Yeah. Huh.
What were you on the spectrum of cultural identity?
Well, I mean, let's say the obvious here. Like I'm white. Like, yeah, I'm Latin American, but my ancestors are European. I was born in Argentina. My grandparents were born in Argentina. Like, there's a lot of, right? But it's like, if you didn't hear me speak Spanish, people could easily be like, oh, Canadian, oh, American, because of the language, like, the accent. So I don't think I ever felt I never had that, like, dilemma. Maybe if I was a little bit more, like, moreno, like, a little bit more, like, tanned, then I could have had that. I know that, like, a lot of my friends that, like, are Mexican or Colombian, they... You know, they dyed their hair super young. They wanted to be blonde. They wanted to be white. But I never had that. I never had that dilemma. I think for me it was the opposite. I was like,
oh, you're not Argentinian.
I was like, I wish I was a little more tanned. You know, like I wish I appeared to be more Latin American.
Grass is always greener.
Grass is always greener. Yeah, no. For I think I was very not lucky. I just didn't have that social identity dilemma. So my dilemmas were different. You know.
You have any of those dilemmas that you want to talk about?
Ooh.
Any crises growing up?
Okay, going back to living in the burbs. I don't know if this is a frequent issue or like a thought that happens to a lot of people. But for me, I remember not wanting... I was born in Argentina. I moved here super young. But I was raised in Coquitlam. I wasn't raised in Argentina. I was raised in Coquitlam. Like the formative years of my life were here. All of my years were here. I had this fear of, because I would listen to my teachers. It was like, oh, I remember growing up down at Austin Avenue, like a local road around here. And they're now 50.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, like, I remember playing when I was your age over there. And for me, I had this fear of living and dying
in Coquitlam.
In the burbs. I would have this fear. Like, obviously, this was not when I was in elementary school. In grade 4, they're just like, this can't happen, right? It was more like, I would say 18. First year of university to university and
okay
like a little older I was like yeah. Whoa, I need a because once you start getting more because in elementary school
you're just it is what it is
it is what like, it is and here. Every international student is a kid so yeah. They don't really have you don't see that much of a cultural difference they're like they're a kid they're still learning the social dynamics of
the society with each other yeah
but For instance, in high school, we had a lot of international kids. Mm-hmm. All their formative years were in Europe or Latin America. Mm-hmm. And I could tell the difference mentally, you know, in like, for instance, like the Italian exchange student that we had or the Argentinian exchange student that we had. They were like a little, it was different. Like culturally, they were different. And I feel like that sparked, I was like, I need to experience something else. I can't, like, I don't want to just live and die just only having the cultural kind of dynamic of Coquitlam as the only thing in me. I need to travel. So that was a dilemma I had, I think. I need to get out of here. And then that kind of started me like throwing shade
at Coquitlam,
at the town that I was born. Like I didn't really appreciate it. I was like, oh, it's so boring. Oh my God. Just being all down and negative about the town that I was living in. So that was, I think that. I don't know if you felt, did you feel that?
Oh, I have 100%. I feel like yours was like a lot more critically thought out though, of like, I need to be more cultured. Not that that is super deep or anything, but I feel like mine was more just along the lines of I need to get out. I need to escape seems like a strong word, but I don't know. It just did feel small town, and I felt restricted. I feel like this is more past tense. I've more recently come to appreciate this city. And in some ways, that kind of scares me that I'm getting too comfortable here, and I need to make sure that I get uncomfortable and at least leave for a bit. I can see myself here maybe in the future, but right now I know that I need to take a break from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. However, we are both still here.
Yep. We are still here.
We've had our moments outside.
I traveled. I think at the end of the day, this is my home.
Yeah.
Right.
You consider it your hometown?
I consider it my hometown. Yeah, there wouldn't be. Can you imagine if I said, no, Buenos Aires? I spent 3 good years there. No, Coquitlam's definitely my hometown. The burbs are my hometown. I mean, I traveled. I traveled for a bit. I think I appreciated a lot of what the different cultures that I visited had to, you know, like, I really want a bikeable city or a walkable city. I feel like it's a lot more communal. Coquitlam is not at all. Like, this isn't just, like, residential homes.
I mean, I feel like that's more where we live.
Yeah.
I feel like at the bottom of the hill, which is an interesting
term. It's so weird,
term.
Right? It's just like, we live on a mountain.
Yep.
And to get anywhere, you need a car or you need to take transit because although it's 800 meters left or east, I mean, if it's 900 meters or a kilometer, that's like 2 hours walking just because of all the hills and everything. But in a car, it's like 3 minutes.
Little bit of an exaggeration, but yes.
No. Me exaggerating? Never.
I mean, very true. If I were to walk an hour from my house down the hill, I would be at school.
How long did it take you to drive from your house here?
Here? Like a minute, 2 minutes.
How long would it take you to walk?
Okay, maybe like 40 minutes.
Right?
Which is such a strange concept. And then also having to go home at any time, it's all uphill.
Yeah.
And especially being in your 20s, I mean, I'm still living with my parents, so if I go out in Vancouver, if I just go to a house party or even, like, out, like, to a club or something, I have to come back to Coquitlam. I have to make sure that I'm going to make the last train. But also, my last bus home is at, like, 11 o'clock.
Mm.
So I'm already going to miss that. And so I'm, like, walking home at, like, 2 or 3 a.m. up a hill for an hour. And it could be, like, pouring rain, but, like, that's just what you do. And yeah, it'll be, like, a 2-hour commute. But, like, it's just the grind. That's what you do.
It is life. There wasn't, like, for me, I didn't experience anything else. So I was like, yeah, you walk for 3 hours.
You walk.
And it's, like, not scenic at all. It's just, it is scenic. You're, like, in the middle of the woods.
Yeah.
But you start hearing.
I guess you're desensitized to it.
Yeah, you don't really appreciate it. Like, look at this.
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty awesome.
Like, look at that.
Switching to a different topic.
Okay.
Then I want to switch it up for a bit. So you were saying that you were second generation, fifth generation.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you can relate to this. But I sometimes felt very, like, sad or like angry or frustrated at the fact that my parents were looked, you know, either like the judgment that they had to go through moving here.
Mm.
For instance, my mom was a teacher, still is a teacher now, but her degree when she first moved here wasn't recognized. And my father was a practicing doctor.
Mm.
And when he moved here, his degree wasn't recognized. So now he's a researcher. And my mom had to go back to school. And, you know, them not knowing the language and everything, it's just like people assumed, because they couldn't speak English and quote-unquote they spoke broken English, that they were dumber.
Mm-hmm.
They were stupid. And there's this quote that it's like, you don't know how smart I am in my own language. Like, you will never know how smart I am in my own language. I speak English because because that's the only language you understand. You speak English because that's the only language you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I always felt so angry at the fact that my parents were not, I guess, given the respect that they deserved, like me knowing how smart they are.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just tough to, like, he would say, I remember vividly once we had practice and he said something that, again, like, it's that one, it's like that Spanish Latin father saying where it's like, have you ever seen a tree fall down 2 times? Where it's like, you don't really know what that means, you know? it's like two birds in the sky, you know, like kind of like weird, like philosophical things. I actually have a saying in Spanish, but like translated to English, like I can't, it just doesn't really hit. And then some kid just started snickering at him, like just laughing. And I was playing in that team, and I just remember getting so mad on my dad's behalf.
You're defensive. You want to protect still, even as a child.
I don't know if you ever had that, like, that feeling of I feel like for when people are like, yeah, but you don't really remember being an immigrant. Like that didn't really affect you. You were like three. You don't really remember it. It's like no, but that I still had an immigrant experience.
It's still a part of your identity.
It's still a part of my life. Like my parents were, like, were for like me having to witness that still affected me. So it's like, although I don't remember the struggle that they, like, I didn't have the struggle that they went through, but I had the struggle, my own struggle of like watching my parents having to sometimes, like, you know, like, what is he saying, can you translate, that kind of thing. So I don't know, do you have anything to add on that?
I don't think I can speak to that as deeply because it wasn't my parents. My parents both were born here, so they have a more similar experience to you where they were like translating for their parents and stuff. But I also had that more with my grandparents. I lived with my grandma growing up and we would go out with her. Like she was our caretaker, like my sister and I. And if we went to the mall and she needed somebody, like me and my sister would have to translate. But I feel like a lot of the time it wasn't even translating. It was more, she wasn't being given respect. And somehow it was more proper to respect like an 8-year-old more who could speak fluent English.
Yeah.
And I feel like a part of her knew that too, which is also even more disheartening that it's like, okay, you just need to talk.
They respect you more than me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially on the phone. I remember taking calls or for my grandma, or like she would be calling the bank and they wouldn't understand. Even though she's like speaking English, maybe there is an accent, but it's like, you know what they're saying.
Yeah. Did you ever go through any racism being from the burbs?
Cool.
Can we talk about that?
Well, please tell me about what you've experienced.
So in high school.
Oh, you had this locked and loaded.
Ready. I had the.
Okay.
So in high school, no. I just remember having a teacher that, as a joke, would always call me by my wrong nationality. He's like, look, Sevi, you're Mexican, so I'll give you a pass. But the next day, he's like, look, Sevi, you're Ecuadorian, so I'll give you a pass. Like he knew I was Argentinian. But it was that, I don't know, it was a joke, apparently, to group all Latin Americans together. And, like, everyone would laugh.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I'm not going to make it weird. I'm not going to, like, in my mind, I'm like, I'm not going to be like, you, that's not cool, dude.
Yeah.
Because he's an adult.
There's a
very strong power dynamic. So, like, I remember that in high school. And I just have a bad experience in that sense. Like, it just, like, now looking back at it, I was like,
why was that okay?
Why was that okay?
Why did everybody accept that?
Yeah, everyone was like, yeah, that's cool. And it just happened. I don't know. I think that was kind of, for me, the biggest thing was in high school. Then, like, soccer was kind of tough. You know, speaking Spanish on the field sometimes, like, kids would make racist remarks to try to get under my skin, and it definitely worked.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a couple red cards just because, I got so angry, and I was like, you're about to get, like, cleated in the shins now because you said go back to your country or like speak English or something.
Okay, I've definitely that's been thrown.
Which
go
is,
back to your country.
Which is strange. Right?
None of us are technically from here unless you're indigenous.
Yeah. Yeah, there's times where it's like, I don't know if you saw, I don't know, there's a clip of like that happened in Bunsen Lake, right? The provincial park.
Yeah.
Where like it went viral. These girls were just like walking. And one was, like Latin American or something. And the girl was, like, the woman, Karen, obviously, was, like, go back to your country. Like, you can't be doing this. It's, like, where are you from? It's, like, the UK. Like, so you're not even from? I was born here. And you weren't even born. Like, you know, it's, like, this weird, like, I don't know. It's just because you look different.
Yeah.
You should go back to where you look normal kind of thing. It's, I don't know. But, yeah. Yeah, that's the burb experience that I remember. That was, like, negative. You know, it was like the cons that came with the pros. And I think that,
which, like, now that I look back on it, I feel like it was never, or for me, I can only speak on my experiences, it was typically older people or people in power, like teachers or maybe like managers. But like in a peer group setting, I felt like people were more socially aware. Or like, I mean, okay, there was definitely racism, but
yeah,
it wasn't such a blatant thing.
Yeah, I mean, like,
what are your experiences?
No kid is racist. No kid just like grows, like just is born. He's like, you know, I have a prejudice towards this group of person. Mm-hmm. It's always like raised into them. I think I think middle school was when kids started making racial remarks, either from what they saw on television or, you know, like the obvious one is just drugs with Latin Americans. So that was middle school. But in elementary school, everyone, no one cared, right? Kids would just be like, you are my friend because you are cool. Mm-hmm. If I don't like you, it's because you're mean to me, not because of your racial identity, you know? But yeah, no, that's what I have to say about that topic.
Beautiful.
Thank you. And now we segue. Art's cool.
So we're both creatives.
Yeah.
And we approached or came to it very differently. Somehow, you always knew performance art always resonated with you as a child. I feel like I came to a lot later in life, and I'm still figuring it out. But I feel like you have a very clear dream and passion. And when did that solidify for you?
I would say that being four... Five?
Four.
Not, well, no, I'm getting to it.
Okay,
it.
I'm sorry.
It was just like, I think I've said this many times. Couldn't speak the language, and thus physical communication was very important to me. Mm-hmm. And I think my mom put me in theater very young. Mm. She was like, you got a knack for this, kid. You're going to go places, kid. You got that knack. So,
the moxie,
kid. So I did theater for a bit. And then I was just always performative. I remember in grade four, we did, every Friday, we'd read poems. And I would ask the teacher if I can, like, perform it, perform the poetry, like, physically, not just, like, vocally. So I think I knew. It also, it's, like, it came so easily to me.
Mm-hmm.
And thus, because I think everyone's creative in their own, like, just humans in general are creative. I think just academic subjects as, like, math, sitting down and writing four essays just came really tough to me. Mm-hmm. I couldn't sit still. And acting was just something I was active. I could just, you know, play. It was like, felt like play.
Mm-hmm.
So as a kid, I just gravitated towards that. And then I realized, you know, like I got an agent super young, like as a kid, I just got an agent and I never understood like the importance of that.
Mm.
And I just started acting and I started going to auditions and I was like, this is what it is. Just like, this is normal because I want to be an actor. So this is what it is. But I knew in my head, I'm like, if I don't make it by the time I graduate high school, I need a change.
Damn.
Because, like, I didn't know that there was such thing as art, like, art school, art university. When I think of university, because I look at my parents and the people around my life, university for me was something so academic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, PhDs, masters, like, being a doctor, being a teacher, being a politician, economics major, kind of that realm. I think it was grade 11 that I figured out that there was such thing as film school. I was like, what do you mean? Is it, like, clown school? Right? It's like, no, you get a BA, you get a bachelor's in arts.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, like, but my brother that studied economics and a minor in political science, he also has a Bachelor of Arts. You're telling me I can get those?
We're the same.
Yeah, you're telling me I could get the same degree just by studying, like, film? And that's, yeah, and I put all my eggs in that basket. And then I worked and studied, and I think I knew that I wanted to do something in film.
How has that been for you now? So you knew at a young age, you went to school, I mean, some people, like, don't need school, not pro or con school.
Yeah.
And now you're, what are you? What would you call yourself?
Oh, like my job?
Sure. It doesn't have to be your job, per se. Just,
like, I want to say.
Who are you, Sevi?
Ooh. I want to say that, I'm a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
But... It's so tough. I think that there's a lot of, like, imposter syndrome.
Mm.
I haven't gotten paid to be a director, but I've directed,
mm-hmm.
right? I've gotten paid to be, like, a production coordinator
mm-hmm.
and, like, producer and stuff. But I wouldn't call myself that. So it's kind of weird in that sense. Like,
because you need the validation of...
Of money, of monetized. Well, everyone says you're a professional once you monetize it. Once you've gotten paid for a job, you're a professional. So it's kind of... I would say I'm a writer-director. Right, that's what my degree is on. Like, my concentrate is, like, screenwriting and directing, and I understand that a lot. I think the reason why I took jobs outside of that is because I still love the film aspect of stuff, like creating something with a team, mm-hmm. and creating a film with a team is like my passion. So that's why I've taken up other roles here and there. But I would say that. I would say I'm a filmmaker. And I can do a lot of stuff.
Beautiful.
Yeah. What would you say you are?
Oh. A creative.
Right? But I feel like that's only a term that's been coined very recently because of social media.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know.
I'm a creative. What? I don't know. I think I don't like boxes either. I make films. But actually, because I was born in the suburbs, I think I had a need to like experience more life. There's a saying, it's like write what you know. Mm. And I wanted to know so much more than just the suburb life.
It wasn't good enough.
No, that it wasn't good enough. It's just I wanted to draw from more experiences. I found myself reading a lot of novels and like having like interviewing my brother and interviewing my dad to be like, what's in my mind? I'm like, your experience sounds a lot more interesting than mine. Mm. So let me try to write your story.
Do you feel like you compare yourself a lot?
Yeah, I think that was. Yeah, that's a big thing. Damn, you sound like my therapist right now. No, yeah, definitely. I think like being the youngest. And having two brothers.
Okay, no, that's like a valid way to look at it.
Yeah.
Of course, it's like your only points of reference, especially growing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's also no, with the art world, there's no ladder that is just so like, that is how I get
A,
there.
A, B, C, that's what you do. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like, I want to be a doctor. How do you get there? You know, you get your D, go to med school, residency, specialize, bing, boom, boom. Of course, there's other things, but
that's like super easy.
No,
right?
No, that's what, it's not
but
that it's easy.
Is like an
is that there is,
there's a framework.
Yeah. But when you look at directors, everyone got their start differently, right? Mm-hmm. Like Steven Spielberg would wait outside of the lot of the company that makes movies. And one day, it's just like, he would just like go in there and he would like just hang around. So it's just like, there's always different stories on how they got there and everything. So you make your own path, which is awesome, but it's also very daunting.
It is very daunting.
Because it's like, there's no guide. It's like, am I doing this right? You kind of just keep doing it until it just like hits.
How do you feel about that now? Like, are you focused on this idea of like making it or breaking in? Or is it more like, I'm just going to do what I do and it's going to work?
When I was a kid, I had this idea where I was like, I'm going to be the first Argentinian to win an EGOT. That was just what I would say. Right? I was like, okay.
I actually do remember you saying that.
Right? It's like, okay. Right? Which is, it's cool to say, but it's also, it's very dependent on other people and it's dependent on an award to make me feel like I've hit my dream. Mm. Where now I just, and this is also still because it has to do with a festival, but my dream would be to make a feature film that gets shown in like a big festival, just like inspires a kid to make films. Right?
So but you want to inspire people.
Yeah, but it's like, if I say that, I've hit it. I make films on a social media platform, and sometimes I get like really nice messages being like, this is really cool, how did you do that? Oh, you've inspired me to try this, to try that. So for me, it's bigger than that. Like, I really want to make a feature film. I think it's a huge accomplishment in my mind. I just want to write like a coming of age film that inspires a kid. Makes them. I don't know if you've ever had this, where you watch a movie and you're like, I need to get out of the house right now and just like live. I don't know. Have you ever gotten that, where you watch a coming of age film and you're like, I want to do that. Have you ever had that?
I feel like I process things differently than you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I have felt inspired and I've watched a coming of age film and be like, wow. I mean, I think it's more internal for me of like, oh, like I've never thought of Coquitlam in this way, or I've never thought about my life in that way. When you see a coming of age from like a third person perspective and you can resonate with their experiences. But I'm not like grabbing my jacket, running out the door.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing against that.
No.
That's beautiful that you do that. Love that for you.
Do you feel that romanticizing life has its cons? Do you think romanticizing life is negative, positive? What are your thoughts on it?
Yes and no. I think it depends on how you go about it. I feel like there's been like an influx on social media of people talking about like being delusional, but like in a positive sense, that you need to be delusional to be successful. Like, nobody's going to believe in you as much as you're going to believe in yourself. Or I feel like this comes in different ways, like different terms. Like before it was like manifestation, before you create like a mood board for your life, or there's always just different things. And I feel like in that sense, the romanticization can be helpful. But if it's just like purely impractical, like then I think it may inhibit you more.
Okay. Do you think romanticizing heartbreak, romanticizing struggles, that you go, you know, just like romanticizing heartbreak or anything like that, do you think that there's a negative impact?
I don't know. I feel like I would go case by case.
Right? Okay.
Clearly you have thoughts on this.
No.
So please,
no,
please expand.
I don't have any thoughts on this.
No, I've just gotten, I've gotten told many times that I should stop comparing things.
Oh, you should stop.
I should stop comparing things to movies.
Oh.
Like life isn't a movie.
Okay.
Like, stop romanticizing so many things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be more realistic about it.
Mm.
Which I feel like, being realistic about things is just like,
it's boring.
No, I don't know. I don't know if it's boring. I don't know if it's right. I don't know if it's wrong. But being a pessimist, in my experience, is so easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy to just look at something and be like, ugh. You know, it's much harder to
It's easier to fail or like to think about failing than it is to think about winning.
Yeah, there's always that character in a movie that's like, you know, I think about the worst case scenario, so I'm never disappointed. Like, I don't know. It's just like, it's so easy.
Yeah.
And I think romanticization is just like being poetically optimistic.
Mm.
That's the only difference between being like romanticizing something and being optimistic about something. Is that you just, yeah. So I try to romanticize a lot. And I think people that don't like it maybe just have an issue with me rather than the...
I mean, everybody's got their own things.
True. Everything has their own things that work. For me, it's just being pessimistic did not work. It, like, made me jaded.
I don't see that working for you.
No. I saw a video on social media today where this kid is saying how he's 19, he's about to turn 20, and he has a series where he counts down. Right? He's like, it's like 30 days until I'm 20.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying how he's like, it's so daunting that I'm like now an adult, right? Thinking about that, now I'm an adult. I never had that.
20?
Like, 20 was never a big age for me.
What about 25?
25 is a bigger.
What about 30?
30 is going to be bigger.
But 20, why not 20?
Because 20 is like, you're 20. You're still a kid. You're in, like, for me, it's like, I was in university when I was 19.
Oh, like nothing actually changed.
I'm a university
in your surroundings.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, it wasn't really that big. Also, I would not say 20 is very, like,
life-changing.
I never saw it. 30 for me is a much more, like, for instance, every sitcom, 30 is always a big birthday for the characters. So just 20 isn't. I don't know. But I saw that, and I was like, I'm finally an adult. And I was thinking, did I consider myself, when do I, because I still say, if I see a kid that's 20, I call him a kid. But I would never refer to a kid as 30.
But you're also 23.
Precisely. So I still think that, like, is it, I don't know. Is it, have you, so coming of age wise, when did
you
start
like
considering?
Come of age?
Yeah. But I still consider myself young. Mm. Like, I would never say, like, I'm so old.
You think that's more of, like, a social thing or, like, a societal thing?
Maybe a societal thing.
Or, like, one day you'll just be like, yeah, I'm an adult. I'm old.
Like,
we're adults, but,
like
I'm
young.
Not young.
Would you refer to yourself as a young adult?
Or would you feel like there's, like, an actual definition of a young adult?
A young adult? Is there?
I mean, one thing that I learned last year, I was playing Grounders. And I ran straight into a playground structure. Now I have this scar on my shin. And I ran for like 1 second straight into a bar. And I got 11 stitches. But like as a child, that would never happen.
No.
I could fall off from like this and be fine.
Yeah.
If I fell off from now, I don't know what would happen.
I think you'd just like disintegrate. You would hit the ground.
But it's like the idea of like physically, we are no longer the same.
Ooh, aging. That's a topic. No, can I say an anecdote real quick?
Give me the anecdote.
So I played soccer my entire life. Never stretched once in my life. I would get up, 8 in the morning, would wake up. 8:30 is my game. I would show up at like 8:20 and just boom, book it, run, play the full 90 minutes. Just after, I wouldn't even stretch. I would just stop running and then just walk, sit in my car, eat food, and I'd get up the next day, be fine. Now, if I jog a light walk, like a fast walk without stretching, hamstring pulled. If I do exercise and I don't stretch after, I go from my muscles being really warm, like warming up, to just fully cold, not even moving anymore, I'd be like so sore. Just not see, not like, but I would like get up. Like I get up from my chair and I let out a grunt now. I have lower back pain.
Okay, I don't think I'm as on the same level as you are.
No. For instance, I think I went through the, I'm old. Oof, my body is failing me. I was running just like a pickup soccer game. And there was a long ball and I was trying to reach it. And I reached out my foot. I was like, eh. And I felt my muscle right here, like the right underneath it. Just like I felt that like kind of like pull. Like I heard it. And I just fell. And it didn't feel like I was straining my muscle. Like, I wasn't really tired and I was pushing it.
Mm-hmm.
I just ran. I went from no pain to pulling my muscle. And I felt it, like, actually give. And then I was like, I'm scared to run. Because, it wasn't, like, in my head, I'm like, I should probably stop. I'm like, I'm really tired.
Mm-hmm.
My muscle feels fatigued. It just went from being normal to just, like, I collapsed. I couldn't run anymore. And I couldn't walk. I had to, like, call my brother and be like, pick me up, please. Please, I can't walk. And I don't know. That like that is what hit me. It's like I'm old now.
Mm.
So instead of like number wise, I notice on like actually physically
when you like actually are aware of your body.
Yeah, I'm like, what can I do or what can't I do that I used to be able to do?
When like you gain weight.
Yeah.
Now. Like you never used to. Or even just like energy levels.
Yeah.
Like just being able to wake up at like 7 a.m. and be fine.
Yeah, maybe being a little tired.
But yeah. But now you just do it. And now it's...
Yeah, and I think that we'll get it when we're... we'll get it when we're older. Like, then the thing, you always look at yourself when you were younger, and you're like, oh, I was so
always
young.
Always had it better.
And it was always like, when we're 25, we're probably going to look at us at 23 and be like, oh, you're so young. And it just keeps going. I feel like it also happens with physically. Right now, I'm like, I'm old. You know? Mm-hmm. I can't...
I think it's also like a self-fulfilling prophecy of like, because we think we're old, we can't do it. So then the older we get... The worse we get. And like it's a cycle.
Well, no, it's like I do it. But right now I'm saying like, I can't run without stretching.
Mm.
But when I'm 40, I might be like, you can run. I can't even run. I can't even stretch. Like it keeps getting worse and worse. Mm. Like for instance, my brother who's 40 is like, you have to do, like you're 20 right now. You have so much energy. Like to do the things that like are really tough. Like you can work for 17 hours right now. Like when you hit like 30 or older, it's going to be really tough to do those long hour days. So do it now that you're younger, like really put in the work. But I'm thinking now being like, oh, I'm really running out of energy. I used to be able to wake up at 7 after having only 2 hours of sleep and run for 48 hours. But now I really need 8 hours of sleep. So it's kind of that thing, which is like, I don't know. Like, that's what I've realized. So I'm trying to, because I've always been afraid of turning older. I hate my birthday. But it's a thing. It's like I say it and thus I feel it. If I say I love my birthday, when my birthday rolls around, I'm probably going to love my birthday. Mm-hmm. But because I say I hate it, When it happens, I'm like, I start thinking about the age. I start mm-hmm. thinking, like, I'm no longer, you know? It's like, I'm the youngest I'll ever be. I'm the oldest I've ever been kind of thing. So just a thought on that. I'm trying to practice on just actually feeling what I'm feeling rather than just some arbitrary number.
Trying to just feel.
Feeling it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Is that something that you ever went through?
I don't really know what the question is. What did I go through?
Struggling with age? Struggling with getting older?
Struggling with age?
Like, if we're talking about coming of age, are you sad that you have come of age and now it's just you keep aging?
I think I used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, more like right after coming of age. Like, numbers did scare me. I think that was more like expectations, though. Like false expectations in my head. Not even, like, people expected this of me. Of, like, oh, like, having a home or... I don't even know if being married was on the list, but just like that you have your degree, that you have a job, that you know what you're doing, that you have goals, that you've checked some stuff off your list. And like, I don't feel like I've done that, but I've also learned that I really like being able to do those things. Like, I'm so happy that I haven't checked it all. Like, I don't want it checked off all now. Like, I want to learn and I want to explore. And I think now, like, age is more, I think of it as, like, experiences. Like, I've had 23 years of experience. And I'm looking forward now to, like, what the 24th year of experience is going to look like.
Yeah.
Physically, I don't think I've actually noticed it, other than, like, being injured.
Getting injured more.
Yeah.
Yeah. As the clouds move in and the rain is starting to appear over the horizon.
Maybe we should end soon. Yeah.
We should end soon.
So, I guess just to end things off.
Yeah.
Any memories of significance in Coquitlam or of Coquitlam?
I'd say, like, you know that movie and that show where kids are, like, coming of age and they ride their bikes and there's magic and a character has, like, a certain number in their name?
Yes.
Okay, so that show. I feel like that's, like, for instance, if you speak with people that, like, from Argentina or from Europe, it's, like, that's a very, like, North American experience of your childhood. I feel like I had a movie childhood.
Like, the suburb.
The suburb. Like, I can watch a coming-of-age film, and I can relate to it so much because the setting is so familiar. So, I think that's a cool experience, like, very unique to me. It's a cool perspective shift when I was telling, well, like, when people were like, wait, are your school buses just yellow? Like, you have that? I'm like, yeah. They're like, that's so cool. It just, like, picks you up from your house. I'm like, and it drops me off at school. It's like, yeah. It's like, whoa, like, your school is just a standalone school. Like, in Argentina, some schools were just, like, in the middle of the city. So it wasn't like this where it's, like, the whole school has all this property to play around with. It's like, it's just a building, like, in the middle of the street, in the middle of the city. So for me, I look back at Coquitlam and I'm very grateful that I had a very, not saying that the other one's bad. It's just in my experience, it's cool to be like, I had a movie-esque childhood, you know?
I feel like even looking back, you're romanticizing it.
I'm romanticizing it, definitely. Like, riding bikes in, like, the streets and, like, taking shortcuts through dirt roads and, you know.
Lots of trails.
A lot of trails, you know, going to get ice cream at a park. It shouldn't be taken for granted. So when I look back at my time, I'm, like, really happy that I can look at it and be like, ew, my life, it got like a movie. But no, yeah, that's, I feel like that's the emotion that I relate back to Coquitlam.
It's beautiful. So nostalgic. Well, I guess that's it. Thank you so much, Sebi.
Okay, can you not sound disgusted? Okay. Go for it. Go again.
Well, I guess that's it. Thanks so much, Sebi.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Oh, okay. Cool. Today's episode featured Sebi Sarani. Special thanks to our camera operator, Bronte Battles. Music composed by Rachel Jiang. Produced with the support of TELUS Story Hive. I'm Josh Valui, and this is The Burbs.